Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We record on Wednesday, October 6th, as we get ready for Notre Dame Week in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech and the Fighting Irish facing off on Saturday night in Lane Stadium. It's going to be a rain-soaked day, also could be a defensive battle between these two good defenses and offenses that have struggled. So we're going to dive into that matchup and see who has the advantage between the Hokies and the Irish. All that and much more coming up on episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you in, whether you're listening on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or watching live or archived on YouTube. We ask you to like, comment, and subscribe if you are on YouTube, and if you are watching live on the YouTube channel. Make sure to drop a comment or question in the chat, and we'll have Will and Chris answer those later on in the show. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to Blacksburg They are trying to build one of the fastest growing and best wrestling programs in the country. Go to southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. As always, I'm your host, Jake Lyman. We have the usual Wednesday crew on set. Will Stewart, our founder and general manager across the way. Chris Coleman, our lead analyst and columnist to my left. Behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, the best podcast producer in the land. And our fourth chair today is Katie Adams. She'll have some nuggets and some trivia at the midway point of the show and also get to your YouTube questions and comments at the end. Before we get into Notre Dame, I want to congratulate Chris Coleman. He just hit 10,000 followers on Twitter.
You can thank NIL for that. Like over the last month, I bet like 300 high school football players have followed me. And I guess they think that like if they start following people will follow them back and they can build followings and they'll get more NIL money, which they won't. I think that has something to do with it.
I appreciate their entrepreneurial spirit, though.
Yep.
Yeah. Very some go-getters out there trying to get Chris Coleman to pay him for something.
So as he was closing in on 10,000 followers, I was thinking to myself, don't give him artificial juice, man. Just let him work his way up there. So I didn't do anything like ask people on Tech Sideline to get him to 10K.
He's close to 10K. Like everybody go follow him.
Yeah, right.
Well, he's at 10K now, at Chris Coleman TSL, if you want to bump him up a little bit further, if you're not following Chris already on Twitter. You actually just had a pretty good stat earlier today.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was also pretty wrong.
It
wasn't wrong. It was. I just didn't read the entire information. PFF has – we were talking about average depth of target downfield, and PFF breaks it down into two different things. And you have to scroll to the bottom of the page to see that you can scroll all the way to the right and see that there's another category. There's average depth of target for 2.5 seconds or less as far as how long a quarterback holds the ball, and average depth of target for greater than 2.5 seconds. So they're broken down into two separate metrics. So I did not know they were broken out, and I just tweeted out the info for the first metric, under 2.5 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did it change it when it went?
It went from third to 12th.
Yeah.
Right. Third okay. For under 2.5. And people listening to this have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So let's not get into it, because it's not one of those things that I can explain about the numbers right now.
Well, I can boil it down. He tweeted out that Braxton Burmeister's depth of target was third in the ACC.
Yes.
Meaning that he throws the third longest passes on average in the ACC, but that's through the first like 2.5 seconds of being in the pocket.
So when he gets the ball out quick, he throws further downfield.
He generally throws further downfield. Now, apparently, overall, it drops him to 12th, which is...
Well, no, above 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Greater than 2.5 seconds, which makes more sense. Okay. But
well,
once again, PFF verifies the eye test.
Right.
Yes. And Braxton Burmeister is going to have a tough test with Notre Dame's defense on Saturday. Overall, this matchup, it seems favorable for Virginia Tech. Just looking at how Notre Dame has played this year, they've relied on the defense. Even their blowout win over Wisconsin wasn't a blowout till late and took two pick sixes at the very end of the game. So Hokies have an opportunity in this game. If they can keep it low scoring, maybe eke it out.
I think so. Well, I think neither team would be comfortable in a shootout, unless, of course, it's like Notre Dame's Wisconsin game when they're just intercepting every pass Wisconsin's throwing and returning it for a touchdown. I guess you'd be comfortable with that kind of a high-scoring game. But, yeah, I think either team is sitting here thinking, man, if we fall behind by two scores and we have to throw the ball and drive 80 yards down the field, are we going to be able to do it? So, you know, both teams are going to be coaching and
spoiler
playing.
Spoiler alert, no.
Yeah, probably not. So it's not going to be one of those games that, like, sets football back 100 years. I mean, that was like the bowl game with Rutgers or Wake Forest game or something like that.
Worst bowl game ever.
Yeah, and but it's not going to be – it's not going to be like a Big 12 shootout either. No. It's going to be – it's going to be similar to the North Carolina game without like a first-round quarterback on the field.
Yeah.
And worse offensive line play. Notre Dame's got – so far, through the first five games of the season, have one of the worst offensive lines in the entire country. Maybe the worst.
And we're going to back that up as we break it down further.
Yeah. Well, we'll start with the quarterbacks for Notre Dame. They've had two that have gotten significant playing time. They've had three guys actually take a snap under center. Jack Cohn, the Wisconsin transfer, has gotten the most reps, but he's kind of more of a sit back in the pocket and throw the ball, but Drew Pine also getting some reps. He's thrown 30 passes, but he can get out of the pocket, which with an offensive line like you talked about that has struggled to protect the passer, maybe that's the kind of guy that they want to throw out there.
If I were a Notre Dame fan, I would not feel comfortable with Cohn going on the road and winning a game in a packed stadium in a night game. He doesn't make good decisions under pressure. Like his stats aren't bad, but if you just watch him, it's just not that great.
Yeah, so let me read the stats because that's what's on the Tech sideline roster card. He will be listed as our leading passer on the roster card, but we don't think he'll start or maybe even play. So he's 91 of 50 on the year, just under 61%, 1,100 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions, which sounds solid. That's not a great completion percentage, though.
But, right, and it's not great yards per attempt and all that. Yeah. And he's really struggled, you know, the last three games as they started to face better defenses.
Yeah.
And he got hurt against Wisconsin and came out of the game. And then they brought in Drew Pine, and I actually saw this drive. I'd already, you know, sat down in my bar seat to watch my football after the Richmond game. And so I saw Pine throw a touchdown pass to the tight end over the middle, and he went 6 of 8. And that was after Cohn got hurt and they had to bring Pine in. And then last week against Cincinnati, I guess, you know, Cohn was healthy enough to play. And I think they liked what they saw out of Pine the previous week, and they wanted to give Cohn one more chance to sort of shape up.
And then he threw an interception on the Cincinnati 1 yard line.
Did you see the interception?
I don't think I saw it. Remember, I was painting my basement stairwell, so I heard about it.
It's in Brandon Patterson's article. I re-put it in there. Put the videos back in. He was under pressure, and he just kind of like just flipped it over to the left. It was kind of think about the Sam Howell interception against Tech to end the game, and think about the Ryan Willis. Let me just flip it over my head.
Say, you were making
North
a
Carolina
Ryan Willis motion.
That's what I thought it was.
Well, that's what Sam Howell did too. Sam Howell did a Ryan Willis against Tech that
yes.
night. This was actually worse than either one of those.
Wow!
Because they were on the 6 yard line, about to score. It was horrible.
And so we'll get into this later. I got into that in my portion of the preview where Notre Dame lost 24-13. They threw that interception, which either cost them 3 or 7 points, depending on what would happen. They threw another interception, I think, that gave the ball to Cincinnati on Notre Dame's 17-yard line, touchdown. And then they fumbled the ensuing kickoff. So they failed to cash in on 3 to 7 points, and they coughed up another 10 in an 11-point loss.
Yeah, it was literally just a few plays, and that's how a lot of games are
these football.
Days. That's football. So I think they put Cohn back in to say, you know what, Pine played well, but we're going to give you one more chance at it since you know you did get hurt, and that's why he had to come in the game.
Yeah.
So he went out there and did that, and then they brought in Pine.
Well, didn't they bring in Buckner for a few plays, though?
Buckner
did play.
Yeah, Buckner's their kind of like their wildcat quarterback, so to speak. Yeah, they let him throw twice against Cincinnati. One of them was intercepted. Not good.
He's their Connor Blumrick, except they let him throw.
They let him throw. Maybe they shouldn't.
Quickly grew to regret that.
And he's a true freshman. and Pine is a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
I think at this point, even if you thought like Cone and Pine were even, Cone's a senior and Pine's a redshirt freshman. You think about the future.
Yeah.
If it's even, play the younger guy. Because, look, Notre Dame's not going to go to the playoffs this year.
They're not going to win the ACC.
Right. Right. They're not in it this year. And so you think about the future of their program. He might be better for them now, but he's definitely going to be, if you think he's going to be your starter next year,
yeah,
go ahead and roll with it and prepare for the future. So you're talking about a guy, assuming Cone doesn't start, which he could. I don't think he will. But I think Pine will be the guy. And if he is, you're talking about a guy who's a redshirt freshman who's thrown 30 career passes coming into Lane Stadium. So, like, there's not really, like, a great option here for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And you think that's a large reason why they've struggled this year offensively is the last couple of years they've had Ian Book, who yeah. is now on an NFL, at least a practice squad right now. I believe he's with the Saints. But now you've got a guy in Cone who, yeah, he can stand there in the pocket, maybe he has more experience, but when you have an offensive line like they've had, giving up 22 sacks, which is the third worst in the country,
yeah.
Tied with North Carolina, by the way, you can't really have a guy who can't be mobile and escape the pocket.
Yeah, and if you do, you better have like a really effective short passing game to get yes. the ball out of there. But their offense just hasn't been working. And you can, I don't know, it depends on depends on your point of view of whether that's more quarterback or more offensive line. I'm sure it's a lot of both.
Yeah, combination.
But I do think that having the more mobile guy back there is probably better for them at this point. And it's not just that Cone isn't mobile. It's that his decision-making under pressure isn't good.
So it's my viewpoint in a lot of this is the very beginning of me thinking about the upcoming games when I make up the roster card and I have to put in the stats and look at the starting lineups and things like that. And I was struck by how similar Notre Dame's, just statistically, their offensive situation is to Virginia Tech. Their quarterback completes about 60% of his passes. Same as Burmeister, 61%. Burmeister's got 5 touchdowns and an interception. Cone's got 9 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. The ratio is similar. Their leading rusher is a tailback. In Tech's case, it's Holston at 4.4 yards a carry. And in Notre Dame's case, it's Williams at 3.8 yards a carry. Not good.
Kieran Williams last year rushed for 1,200 yards and yeah. averaged, I believe, 5.3 yes. yards per carry. And this year he's at 3.8 yards per carry and averaging 57 yards per game. So that'll show you right there that's a big offensive line issue. I mean,
yes.
when your running back drops 1.5 yards per carry in 1 year, and you're averaging 2.8 yards per carry as a team, which I think is next to last.
They're
in
averaging 2.4 yards
2.4,
per carry.
I was thinking yeah. way too much credit.
Fourth worst in the country.
Fourth worst. God, there's three. There's
so you
three
read the number and you're like, that can't be right. And you converted it to 2.8.
Yeah, right.
So wait a minute. Let me finish up here. Their second leading rusher is a quarterback. In Virginia Tech's case, it's Burmeister with 144 yards. And Notre Dame's case, it's Buckner with 100 yards. And then you get into the receivers. And now here's where they separate a little bit. Tech's leading receivers are Turner with 16 and Robinson with 14. Notre Dame's got their tight end Mayer with 32 receptions. But their second leading receiver has 15, just like Tech. So just looking at it statistically, it's very similar.
Yeah, and I would say that probably if Mayer's healthy, he's probably the best player on either offense.
I think so.
He's a very versatile tight end. He can line up as an inline tight end. He can split out wide as an outside receiver. Just a very, very dangerous player. Now, he got hurt last week against Cincinnati. Kind of a muscle strain on the inside of his leg.
Adductor.
Adductor is what that's called.
Yeah.
And I know that because when you get on the adductor machine in the gym, it's right there in front of me.
That's the machine they always kind of put in the corner because it's the one where you spread your legs. Yeah. Like
nobody
that.
Wants to be in the middle of the gym doing that.
Nobody wants to be on the adductor machine.
It would be nice if James Mitchell hadn't gotten hurt and we could maybe counter that threat with our own Michael Mayer. But we don't know like how much he's been practicing this week. Brian Kelly talked on Monday about how they would need to manage him throughout the course of the week. I guess manage his health to make sure he's able to play.
And he said he will play.
And he said as of Monday, Kelly said he was going to play. Man. They were going to manage him throughout the week, and he was going to play.
That's a huge loss if he can't be 100%.
If he can't be 100%. I mean, he's by far their best player on offense, for sure.
Well, it is strange looking at this Notre Dame team. Usually you have that big tight end who is talented. And we look at Kyren Williams. I watched him play a lot last year, and I thought he was going to be a star. It is the offensive line that hasn't been as good. I mean, you think of Notre Dame offensive linemen in the NFL, there's more than you can count on both hands.
Apparently they lost a bunch to the next level last year. Yes. I can't give you the numbers.
And it is strange to see them as, by pass protection sacks, the third worst offensive line in the country, and that seems to be something the Hokies could take advantage of.
You know, and they've got a super senior at right guard, a redshirt senior at right tackle,
a junior at center,
a redshirt sophomore at left guard. So you know, third year in the program, but their guards aren't playing well at all. Their center's been quite good. Their right tackle's been okay. You know, they've really struggled at left tackle. Michael Cromartie is their normal starter there. He's a redshirt freshman, but he's had an ankle injury and he's only been able to play like 100 snaps. So Tosh Baker has replaced him, who's also a redshirt freshman. And Baker has just gotten abused. Like, he's having a terrible season. He is not ready. But Tosh Baker is also in concussion protocol. And he couldn't finish the Cincinnati game last week, so their third option at left tackle, Joe Ault, who is actually listed as their backup right tackle and also their fourth tight end, I guess in jumbo packages and things like that. He's a true freshman. So they actually, I believe, finished the Cincinnati game with that true freshman at left tackle, down to their third option there. So we don't know what that position is going to look like this week. Cromartie could be back. Maybe Baker passes concussion protocol. Maybe neither one of them happens, and it's true freshman Joe Ault.
So that's on the left side, correct?
That's on the left side.
So you're going to line Taiwan Garbutt up from across from that position.
No, not this.
Taiwan's listed as a right defensive end.
They've mixed it up.
Have they? They've moved him around?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, looking at this Tech defense and how well they've played outside of maybe a quarter or a half in that first half of the West Virginia game, they've been very good, and they also had that great game plan for Sam Howell and the Tar Heels in week one. Now with a week off to prepare for this team, that there's kind of been a blueprint for how to stop this Notre Dame offense this season. You would assume Justin Hamilton is ready with a good game plan for this team.
Yeah, and it's kind of like which quarterback do you expect to play? And I'm not putting myself in Hamilton's head or anything, but you know, Jack Cohn is so bad under pressure that you kind of feel like, well, maybe we should blitz more, do more twisting and stunning, try to get as much pressure on the quarterback as possible and force those bad mistakes.
The UNC game.
Right. Yes. Whereas Drew Pine, it's such a short sample size, so it's hard to be sure, but he's only 5'11", 5'11 and a half. He's not a tall quarterback by any stretch, just not a big guy in general. But when he did struggle against Cincinnati last week, they gave him a spark, but he was only 9 of 22. It's not like he went out there and efficiently lit them up and drove them down the field. I mean, that's a very, very low completion percentage. And he, at times, showed kind of a lot of confusion when seeing certain types of zones and things like that. So if Cone's in there, do you just blitz the heck out of him? And if Pine is in there, based on what you've seen with him struggling against zone, are you maybe more inclined to drop more guys into coverage to confuse a redshirt freshman like that, a young player who showed signs last week of not being able to read a lot of zone?
Well, and for Justin Hamilton, that must have helped you getting off weekend. You can watch that Cincinnati Notre Dame game as it's happening and see both quarterbacks and kind of see where they struggle and what he can do.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, maybe you've already got your game plan set, and then they change quarterbacks, and you're like, oh, well, I guess I have to redo my game plan now.
Yeah, and I think they talked about that some in the media opportunities this week, where they kind of have to be ready for anything.
Yeah.
Amari Barno is somebody I wanted to highlight when we talk about Notre Dame's offense versus Virginia Tech's defense. He has kind of disappeared the last couple of weeks after a big North Carolina game. We talked about the left tackle situation for Notre Dame. Maybe that's where you put Barno. You could try and put him over there if they have Joe Ault playing there as a true freshman. Give an opportunity to maybe pin his ears back and go out to the quarterback.
I think you still have to mix him up to a certain extent, because Notre Dame, they will help their left tackle, I'm sure. And you don't want to line him up there every time just to have him double teamed every time. You know, that's not going to do anybody any good. But I think you have to mix them up. But yes, that is a matchup that you would hope could be exploited. Now, Barno does not have a sack or a tackle for loss since the UNC game.
Yep.
But he just released his merchandise last week during the bye week. So now would be the time to jumpstart those hoodie sales.
That's true.
Have a big game. Put your hat on after the game.
Yeah.
Say, I'm going to Disney World. The whole deal, man.
Looking at Tech's defense, they've played so well, but the strength of this Notre Dame team has been their weapons. Their pass catchers, and especially the running backs, have been great out of the backfield as well. Mm-hmm. So these issues with the passing game for Notre Dame, it hasn't been because of a lack of options to throw the ball to. Yeah. So it's going to be a huge game for the Hokies secondary. They're going to have to step up in those passing situations.
Yeah, I should have an opportunity to get some interception this game. At some point, a Tech defensive back is going to have his hands on the football, and he's got to come down with
it. Let it be Jermaine Waller.
Please let it be Jermaine Waller.
So one of the things I worry listening to all this discussion is who was the West Virginia tailback? What was his name?
Why did you ask?
Letty Brown.
Letty. Letty.
Yes.
You know, I'll write the game previews and then just forget
and
it
then
all
just
afterwards.
Flush it. Yeah. Well, he transferred from Florida State, and he didn't have, like, early in the season before Tech played him, he hadn't really stood out, and he certainly stood out running up the middle on one of the very first plays of the game.
Second play of the game, yep.
So I worry about that kind of thing. This is not a great Notre Dame offense. Just don't give up the cheap score, you know. And that's really all that was against West Virginia. That was just a cheap score.
Yeah.
And so I hope that kind of thing doesn't happen in this game.
Like if they throw it up to one of their wide receivers and he makes a play on it, or they earn it, you know, if they drive down the field on a score, fine, you know. But make them earn it. Don't have like a busted coverage or, oops, I just had a brain fart and missed my gap. As a linebacker, kind of, you know, don't hand them something easy.
And they did. They had one or two they had one passing touchdown against Cincinnati that was just, it was a big play. It was a 32-yarder, and Pine threw it up.
Yeah, in the single coverage, and the guy went up and got the ball.
Made a play.
Yeah, right. Like if they score, make it be on plays like that where they earn it.
Yeah.
And talking about Kyren Williams, he is that playmaker for this team. Again, 1,200 yards last year. He hasn't been as good this year, but where he has been good is catching passes out of the backfield. He's averaging over 12 yards per reception and has two touchdowns. So that's going to be something the Hokies have to key in on and be able to cover him out of the backfield, even if he doesn't have the same ability behind this offensive line that he did last year.
Yeah, a long of 55, 14 receptions. Chris Tyree, his backup. Richmond area Hokies will know who Chris Tyree is. He has 13 catches so far this year and also a 55-yarder.
Yep.
So they will dump it down to their running back. Sometimes they don't have any choice because the defensive line is coming out
at
in waves. You just got to flick it out there. But, they do spread the ball around to wide receivers, to tight ends, and to running backs. Although, outside of Mayer, I don't think they have a competent number two tight end. Mayer kind of reminds me of, I know he's listed as a tight end, but he reminds me of that outside receiver they had a couple of years ago who got drafted.
Whose name I can't remember.
Whose name I can't remember.
Chase Claypool.
Yes.
Yeah, Claypool.
Yes, Chase Claypool. He's the only player I ever saw in a game go up in a one-on-one situation with Caleb Farley and make the catch.
Yeah.
Was that on the last drive of the game?
No, Farley was actually hurt on
that's
the last
right.
drive of the game.
Yep.
Right. And Waller wasn't in the game. And that's probably why Tech lost the game.
As good as they were that year, they were without those two awesome corners on that last drive.
On that last drive against Notre Dame.
And it was Claypool. It was third and 15 or something. Might even have been fourth down, and Claypool down the middle of the field made the catch.
Yeah.
That's the type of guy that Mayer is. And it's funny looking at Notre Dame. They've had two tight ends drafted in the first three rounds of an NFL draft the last 2 years. It was Cole Kmet 2 years ago, Tommy Tremble this year. And they've got another stud just sitting
a sophomore.
There, too. Exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a redshirt sophomore or a true sophomore, but that's what he's listed as.
A true sophomore.
Yeah.
Well, Mayer is going to be crucial, especially on third downs when they need somebody to throw to, maybe a guy you just toss it up to. And I was looking at third down conversion percentage for both these teams, and both teams defensively are in the top 15 in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame, 28.4, is 10th. Virginia Tech, 13th in the country at 28.8.
Yeah. And I think Notre Dame in the last two games has only surrendered something like 10.7% on third.
Yeah, it's 3 of 25.
Yeah.
Which is
something
insane.
Like, yes. Yeah. So you better get them on first or second, or get them in third and very short to have a chance to convert. And Mayer is going to be important. And it's, somebody asked me on the radio yesterday, it's like, who will Virginia Tech use on defense to counter Mayer? And I was like, it can't be one person, because sometimes he lines up as a tight end. Yeah. Sometimes he lines up as a wide receiver. I mean, you don't know what formation they're going to be in when you see him in the game, because he can line up anywhere. I mean, it could be a traditional in-line tight end with his hand in the dirt formation, or they can go three or four wide. And so it's going to be Jermaine Waller, you know, it's going to be Dax Holyfield, it's going to be Alan Sisdale, it's got to be everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible that, you know, again, I'm sitting here listening to this and thinking, if I'm Justin Hamilton, what do I do? You know, and we're like, well, pressure the quarterback. Well, there are different ways you can pressure the quarterback. If you bring a linebacker or two and you're rushing five or six guys and they dump off to to Williams or Tyree, then you're in trouble. Do you try at the beginning of the game to just see what you can get out of your front three or four guys, particularly whoever's lined up overside the left tackle? It's my personal opinion. I haven't looked at any stats to back this up, but it's my personal opinion that Hamilton has been – he's relied more on a three- and a four-man rush than he has in bringing linebackers to generate pressure. And, again, that's just what I think from watching. So it'll be interesting to see what way he goes in this.
We'll get into this later, but this is going to be a field position game. If I'm blitzing, I'm more inclined to blitz on an early down and try to get them in long yardage situations. Right. Because I think if you're second and 12 or third and 12, it becomes a lot more difficult to pick up a first down and change field position than, you know, it is if you pick up 4 yards on first down and then all of a sudden it's second and six.
Yep.
I'd actually be more inclined to blitz on early downs in this game. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, as long as you pick your gaps carefully and, you know, make it more of a run blitz and then and keep them to second and 10, and then it changes things.
Well, especially on third down, if you blitz and they sneak Kyren Williams or Chris Tyree out there, those are the type of explosive playmakers that if you don't have somebody for a screen, they could go all the way. I mean, we saw that against UNC. They blitzed at the wrong time, and Josh Downs took it all the way to the house.
Yeah. You're right, and Tech hasn't been a big blitzing team this year.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the field position, and I think that is going to be crucial for these teams. I believe we'll add the stat 25 out of 26 opposing drives.
It's more than that. It's like the one where Kadem threw the
interception. Threw the interception.
It's actually, I think, in the 40s.
It may be like 45 or 46.
Yeah.
Well, Kadem's interception against Richmond, the only time an opposing team has started in Virginia Tech territory, but this is a Notre Dame team that's forced 12 turnovers in five games. So it's kind of strength on strength there. Can the Hokies take care of the football, or is Notre Dame going to be a little bit too good?
Yeah. Excuse me. Something went around the wrong pipe.
I think you have to drink a water from the Hank Aaron.
Yeah, exactly. I think you need to pick your spots. You can't throw it down the field just for the sake of doing it. You have to, when you see single coverage on the outside and you've got Trey Turner out there, then yeah, absolutely. But they will mix up their coverages and things like that. So you have to make sure that you're not reading one thing pre-snap and then that safety bails out. And then as it ends up, you're throwing into double coverage deep. You know, they're quite good at things like that. So you gotta be careful. The thing is, like, I know this is not something fans want to hear, but this is a game, but where if you play it conservatively and careful, you probably got a better chance to win, because the Notre Dame offense is not good enough to come in here and just put up 30 or 40 points on Virginia Tech and outscore them. You just don't turn it over, because they can score 40 points in a game, as Wisconsin found out, but only if you just throw them the football.
it's one of those things, you know, there's that old saying that football games are lost by mistakes more than they're won by, you know, making plays. And you know, that's the case here. And again, as Chris said, fans don't really want to hear that. So if you see some jet sweeps and runs up the middle and things like that when it's early in the game and Tech's on their own 20-yard line, you know, it's the safe play. It's the play that in a lot of ways makes sense. I don't like it either, but it's the play that makes sense.
And it doesn't seem like on third downs we're going to see Tech airing it out, especially third and longs. It's going to be a lot of draws and screens. Again, playing the field position game, because I think a lot of the reason Tech's defense has been so good is the complementary football. They haven't been put in tough situations all that often.
Tech is fifth in the country in offensive field position, seventh in the country in defensive field position, fifth in the country in net field position. Virginia Tech is actually 51st in the country in available yards on offense. And available yards are measured by the percentage of yards you pick up based on your starting field position. So if you start at your own 20, you could potentially gain 80 yards.
You got 80.
And if you gain 40, yards, then you picked up 50% of your available yards, right? So Tech is like right around 48 or 49% of their available yards gained this year, which is 51st in the country. They're not scoring a lot of points, but what they're generally doing is picking up a first down or two every drive. So they're punting from closer to midfield, which means opposing offenses are generally starting from deep in their own territory against Virginia Tech. And Tech is dominating the field position game this year. And that's why they beat North Carolina. It's absolutely why they beat North Carolina, is because they crushed them in the field position game. You know, I know, like everybody else, when Virginia Tech hired Justin Fuente, a former offensive coordinator, I'm expecting high-flying points, everything like that. And so what we got is Frank Beamer 2.0. Which, in retrospect, should not be surprising because he came from Gary Patterson's program.
Right. And he appreciates, like you said just a minute ago, how all three facets of the game work together.
Right.
You know, and Frank's thing, where he was somewhat revolutionary, even though I think Bobby Bowden did it before Frank did, Frank felt that the special teams could be a unit that you could use to score and you could use to change the course of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, and so Frank also appreciated how all three facets work together. And that was reflected in how his offense played versus knowing they had an awesome defense year in and year out. And Fuente's made comments throughout his 6 years at Tech that lead you to understand that he thinks in the same way.
Notre Dame, defensively, I think they're something like 98th in field position this year. And that's because their offense goes backwards so much. So, and that's why I say I would blitz on early downs. Because if you get them in long yardage situations and you get early sacks or tackles for loss and things like that, it makes them more difficult for them to pick up a first down. So they're punting from deeper on their own territory. So you're getting the ball closer to midfield. Even if you don't score on that drive, if you pick up one first down, then you can punt and pin them inside the 10. You can punch your way down the field. I know that sounds boring.
And then you hit a big play and you're inside their 20 or their 10.
Right, right. And I know that sounds boring, but that's how Frank Beamer would have looked at this game, right?
Well, that's mostly how wars are fought, right? A little bit at a time. Chris was like, well, they don't punt in wars.
Yeah, they don't punt. it depends. Yeah. Depends on the war.
Depends upon the war.
I know that sounds boring. And trust me, I'm going to be a fan in that stadium like everybody else. I would love nothing else than to see Virginia Tech roll out there and hit an 80-yard touchdown pass on the first play from scrimmage. But that's probably not going to happen. If Virginia Tech goes down there and just starts throwing it all over the field against Notre Dame, especially downfield, that's Virginia Tech's weakness as an offense, is throwing the ball down the field. Notre Dame intercepting passes against teams foolish enough to throw down the field against them, that's Notre Dame's strength. They have 9 interceptions this year. It would be like – it would have been like – a mid-2000s ACC team coming out and trying to throw the ball down the field against Brandon Flowers and Jimmy Williams and DJ Parker and that whole group. They all tried it, and they shouldn't have.
Some of them did, and they weren't able to.
And none of it just never worked, and it wasn't smart to do for those other teams to do that. So it wouldn't be smart, I don't think, for Virginia Tech to do that in this game. I think you pick your spots. Like, if you see Trey Turner in man coverage on the outside, then by all means, go for it. But in a game like this, you know, a first down can be very important. Just one first down on a drive can be very important because of field position.
Fans maybe need to expect just a slog of a game.
It's going to be a grinder, man. Listen, it's going to be a grinder.
You're going to have all day to tailgate, so take advantage of it.
it might be rainy,
help
though.
You enjoy the game more.
It might be rainy, which could make this even worse. It's going to be just running in some mud, and I think we could see maybe like a 6-3 final in this game or something.
I'll tell you where the biggest impact of the rain is going to be is you can kiss that stripe effect goodbye.
Yeah.
It's going to be as a
bucket. I have to make sure I have an orange poncho.
I've got a maroon poncho. I'm in an orange section, you know, so I don't know. I'll dig around in the closet and see what I can find, but everybody's got a plan for that.
Ponchos are just multicolored. Like, when it starts raining, you start seeing pink and green showing up in the stands. And
Clark Ruin texted me right before we started the live show, and he said, Skittles effect.
Oh, I remember one time before a game, I was stupid enough to not check the radar. Sure enough, I wake up that morning, and it's raining. And the day before, it said it probably wasn't going to rain, but then it was raining. So I had to improvise. I couldn't find a poncho, so I had to go to Kroger before the game and buy a poncho. And all they had was like these pink ponchos that were child's. So I was wearing this tiny little pink poncho. And I was like, I'm not even sure this is worth it. So I'm going to get my poncho in advance this year.
You got 3 days to plan ahead, Hokies fans, for possible rain in Lane Stadium. We're going to dive into Notre Dame's defense on the other side of the break. But before we get away from the offense, the crowd. It's a 7:30 night game. Although it's going to be rainy, it feels like the 2 weeks removed from the Richmond game have kind of brought the buzz back. It seems like Blacksburg is ready for this game. Do you think it's going to be UNC maybe even better on Saturday?
I think because of the weather, no. I think that'll take the edge off of it.
We'll see. The weather forecast, just I checked it yesterday when I wrote the preview, and I checked it again today to go back and edit my paragraph where I talked about the percentage of chance of rain.
See, I had changed it from 24% to 51% for weather.com when I edited last night.
Oh, okay. But the AccuWeather percentage of rain chance actually dropped from yesterday to today. Okay. And if you look at the estimated like amount of rain, I want to say it's something – it's less than 0.2 inches during the day on Saturday and maybe like 0.1 inches on Saturday night. It's not much rain. It's not going to be Boston College 2007.
Right. Yeah. So, or even Pitt 2019. Right.
And I'm telling
that
you, 65,000 people sat there for 3 hours against Boston College in 2007.
That was a party.
Everybody stayed the entire game. And fans, they're just not as tough these days.
I don't recall that game. Did Virginia Tech play Boston College in 2007?
2009 Miami game is another one where it was just pouring buckets and
all right,
everybody
stayed. So the weather.com app says overcast with rain showers at times during the day, 68% chance. Okay. During the day. And it doesn't put a number on
it. And it says at times. It doesn't mean it's going to be
all
raining.
All the time.
Yep.
And then so that percentage drops from 68% to 43% at night, showers early becoming less numerous late.
We're going to be fine.
It should be fine.
All right. It's football, man.
You would think for a game this big, you look at Tech's remaining games on the schedule at home with Pitt is going to be a big game.
That's big.
It's going to be a big game, but
it's
going to
be a big game, but our fans aren't going to treat it.
Yes,
like
it's not the most flashy name opponent. And then Syracuse and Duke. I think Tech fans are going to show out for this game.
I think they will too, and then they want for Pitt. Pitt's a better football team than Notre Dame.
And we
need them to be
there for the Pitt game.
Right.
Yes.
All right, well, we are going to hop into Notre Dame's defense on the other side of the break. Before we head to break, it's time to send it over to our fourth chair and Katie Adams, who has some notes and trivia and whatever else she's got.
So we talked about the Notre Dame quarterback controversy a little bit already. If I had to guess, I would say that Drew Pine's going to trot out there under center.
Right.
May not be new information to you all, but I think it would be an interesting tidbit for some of the fans. If he does come into Lane Stadium and he loses, he's going to get an earful from his uncle, who is Jim Pine. Former Virginia Tech offensive line All-American.
How did I not know
I was going to mention it until...
I assume that you guys did know about it. That's why I said it may not be new information.
So to not steal any thunder, I purposefully don't like look at the opponent game notes. Well, where'd you get that
from? It wasn't even in the game notes. My whole dad's side of the family is a big Notre Dame fan, so I heard this from them last weekend.
Wow.
I'll have to go into his like roster bio
and see if it's not,
I don't think it's on there.
Really?
I looked it up. I was just... curious, and I looked up Drew Pine, Jim Pine, and it was like an article when he was getting recruited.
So he's got to be from New England then, I guess, right?
Yes. He's from Canada.
Oh, he's from Canada. Actually. Well, Jim Pine was from Massachusetts.
Yeah. So he moved there in high school to play for a good program, but that'll be interesting for him playing and looking up and seeing Pine in the rafters, 73,
wow.
Retired.
I wonder if anybody in the media knows that at all.
It wasn't in the game notes. It should be.
He wasn't available for interviews yesterday. Apparently, Brian Kelly threw like one regular player and three walk-ons out there for interviews.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Just like Virginia Tech used to do.
Right. He should get asked about that after the game, though.
So a little bit of Jim Pine trivia. Tell me if I'm remembering this correctly. Jim Pine's grandfather and father played in the NFL.
I believe that.
Yeah, they have a football family.
So three generations.
Now, one of my earliest memories of Virginia Tech football, I was 10 years old, and you know the All-American show they do around Christmas Day or whatever? Who hosted it back in the day?
Was it Bob Hope?
I think it was Bob Hope.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that show when I was 10 years old to see Jim Pine on that show because he was a first-team All-American.
Well, I remember looking at Playboy just to see Bruce Smith, and that was the only page I looked at.
So it would be some scene if they choose Jim Pine to do the Let's Go before the fourth quarter. That'll be interesting. I'm waiting to see who they use for that. And if it's him, that would be funny.
Very cool.
Moving on from that, Virginia Tech seeking to get their second win at home against a top 25 team. I think this will probably be their last opportunity to get a ranked win at home. I think it's safe to say that Syracuse isn't going to be ranked. Duke isn't going to be ranked. Pitt could be ranked, but they're coming off of a bye, so I doubt that they're going to jump back into the polls. Yep. Curious to see if you guys know the last season that we beat two ranked opponents at home.
Oh, I think 2009.
Yep. Well, that would have been my first guess.
It was actually back-to-back weeks.
Nebraska and Miami.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, so Nebraska was ranked.
Miami, and then Nebraska. Well, and then Miami.
Remember, Nebraska never won fewer than 9 games under Bo Pelini. And then they fired him.
And they had an awesome defense that year, and like maybe one or two.
They had Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, they had Jared Crick.
Mukamara.
It might have been Mukamara. I'm not. Levante David wasn't there quite yet. I don't think so.
Yeah, but they were loaded.
Yeah, and they had Roy Helu Jr. I think the running back. He was good.
He played for the Redskins.
I'm sure their quarterback's name was Martinez.
I would have guessed 2009, but I lost the fact that they also played Nebraska, so I wouldn't have been able to tell you who the second one was.
Yeah. Well, remember, didn't Tech go – that was the last time Tech beat a top 25 team at home until they beat Wake Forest last year, or 2019.
Yes, we had to go all Wake Forest last year.
That's the same as beating Nebraska.
And I know that in Frank's last 4 years, starting in 2012, Tech was bad at home.
Anytime we played a big game, you were like, oh, please let it be on the road because we're not going to win at home.
They were very good on the road. I'm not going to say great, but they were very good.
Yeah.
So we talked about how rain is in the forecast. I really wanted to be able to find a cool stat to see how well Tech plays at home in rain games and couldn't find anything on that. But I guess recent home games where there was a downpour, recent memory, Pitt 2019 comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Kenny Pickett was still their quarterback. He scored 0 points, but he's probably going to come in here and score 50. He's been doing this season.
Yeah, actually, can we let the rain hold off until next week instead of this week?
Can we trade? Make a trade?
That would be nice. And then before that, just off the top of my head, was it Duke in 2015 or 2016 where there was players sliding in the end zones?
2017.
Okay.
Yep. It was 2017, 2015 Pitt when they held us to 100 yards of total offense.
That was a rainy day.
That was rainy. Yes. That was horrible. That's the picture Avon has during the national anthem, and there's nobody in the crowd. Because everybody knew what was going to happen.
And it happened.
And
it's going to rain, and we're not going to get anywhere on offense.
We're
going to
be bad. So we're not coming this week.
That was the game that really started the push towards Frank's retirement, was when they had 100 yards against Pitt.
100 yards against Pitt. And it was awful to watch.
Yeah.
And it was cold. I rolled in the stadium, and I was the only person in my entire row. I was the only person in my row and the row in front of me, and there was one person in the row behind me. And I just – I couldn't get anybody to go to the game with me.
Man.
And it was brutal.
So that 2017 Duke, is that right?
I forget the final score. 24-3, I think, was the final score of that game. Now, I remember that one because I was in the indoor club seats in the south end zone, so I beat the rain for that one.
Well, you remember that game triggered the whole discussion of what about that whole system they used to have to drain the field?
That's actually – I almost brought this up earlier. Is that fixed now?
Okay, so you youngins need to be educated here. So the Georgia Tech – the 2000 season opener, when it was canceled by lightning, it rained. So the lightning made everybody leave the field. And then it started pouring rain, and it rained for an hour. And there was no thought of just wait until it quits raining and play the game because the field was just flooded. So after that, Virginia Tech installed a tray system in the field, and it was trays of grass that it was modular, and you could bring it in and set it down, and so it would drain underneath these trays, and there was this whole subterranean system for sucking the water out, and Tech was on television sometime within the next year or two after they got that installed, and they showed the pump on the sidelines. It was a thing almost as big as this room that would suck the water out from the field and rush it off. So in in 20, it didn't come up in 2009 that I remember in that Miami game.
Oh, that was fun.
But that 2017 Duke game when Water was standing on the field, everybody yeah, started that.
Even our worst rain games in the past, it just drained right off.
Everybody started asking the question, well, what happened to that
pump system?
$2 million system that was supposed to suck the water out of the field. So I emailed people over at Tech and they were like, I don't know, we're looking into it. Yep. So it's one of the things that gets lost from, you know, that was the Jim Weaver regime, early in the Jim Weaver regime. And then 15 years later in Whit Babcock's regime, people are like, I don't know what you're talking.
So it's like it was either broken or somebody forgot to turn it on.
Maybe they forgot it existed.
Yeah, well, it didn't seem to be that bad for the Pitt game a couple years ago, the 2019 Pitt game. Now, as far as Tech and the rain, it's a mixed history, man. I mean, everybody remembers the 2009 Miami game as a great moment. One of my first ever games at Tech was the 1995 Cincinnati game. So not so great.
Yeah.
Boston College, not so great. Pitt 2 years ago, 28-0, great.
Not at home, but Hurricane game a few years ago.
Hurricane game against Texas A&M in 2003 was awesome.
Yeah.
What was the one a few years ago?
North Carolina.
Oh, that was on the road, but yes, that was a great moment. So,
and there was one either 1995 or 96. Jeff Holland, if you're listening, please chime in.
Oh, it was Akron opening.
Where they traveled to Rutgers, and that was back when Rutgers and Tech used to go 95. At it every year. Yeah. That was 95, and that was a mess. It wasn't on television, but just seeing pictures and highlights from it. Every time a guy takes a step, a big splash.
So it's a mixed history in the rain, I think.
Yeah, everybody tries to ask the question, who does the rain favor? I just don't think you really know until you get
You know, both of these teams, neither one of these teams has a particularly strong running game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to favor whoever happens. It would favor whoever happens to not screw up.
Whoever doesn't the slip and fall.
Right, right. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to rain hard enough for it to, or the ball is going to be slick per se, I guess, but I don't think it's going to be some kind of
not going to be a downpour.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Well, let's hope that we play like we did in that 2019 Pitt game. But that's all for me.
Perfect. Thank you, Katie. And we're going to get it back to Katie for YouTube questions and comments later as well. You had something?
Nope.
We're good. All right. We're going to take a break here on episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. When we come back, we're going to dive in to how the Hokies offense can start to improve against a really tough Notre Dame defense. Make sure you stay with us here on episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back into episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We've got the full crew on set. Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, I'm Jake Lyman. Katie Adams is in the fourth chair and Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. We are looking at Virginia Tech and Notre Dame on Saturday in Lane Stadium. A huge matchup for the Hokies after their bye week following a win against Richmond 2 weeks ago. We've already talked a lot about the Notre Dame offense and their matchup with the Hokies defense, but the strength of this Irish team has been the defense all year long, and they are very, very good with a lot of talented guys on that side of the ball.
New defensive coordinator, too, Marcus Freeman, came from Cincinnati. He's only 35 years old, so he's even younger than Justin Hamilton. Is considered a high riser in the sport.
Yeah, he was at Cincinnati for 4 years in 2017 through 2020.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, he did a great job there. Notre Dame hired him. It was not really a surprising hire, in my opinion. It wasn't going to take too much longer for somebody to go in there and get him. And it's kind of a mix-up coverage, mix-up fronts, a lot of deception and things like that. So they'll be quite a challenge. They're big without being too big. Where they're particularly big to me in this is in the secondary. Yeah. Cornerback Cam Hart, 6'2 and a half, 205 pounds. Free safety Kyle Hamilton, 6'4, 220 pounds. I mean, their rover is 6'2, 222. So they got some big guys back there.
Excuse me. I want to interrupt for a rant. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt, but I just have to get this out there. So, again, I talk about making up the roster cards. I can't remember who the other team is, but Notre Dame is the second team I've encountered, which measures their players, I'm not exaggerating, to an eighth of an inch.
6'1 and 5/8.
6'2 and 7/8.
I think UNC is the other team that does that.
Was it UNC?
Of course.
Yeah. Now, Notre Dame, I think, is unique in that they list players by their academic level and their football eligibility.
Right.
So you will see graduate and senior, meaning they're taking graduate level classes, but they're senior level for football.
And it was nice of them to like put asterisks next to all the super seniors that they have.
Yeah.
Which isn't that many.
Which I did not transfer over to the roster card. But so if you care, I did not try to convert the eighths of an inch. I just cut them off. So if somebody is 6'2 and 7/8, they're listed at 6'2.
Okay.
So
that makes it easier for you instead of having to round.
Well, this is, I mean, you know, Malcolm, put the camera on me. You can see how much detail is in one of these roster cards, you know. And yeah, I don't have time to mess around with converting your eighths of an inch Notre Dame or North Carolina. All right, Chris, sorry. Back to the show.
But, yeah, so I think Tech's receivers will have to be physical against these guys, and that's been an issue in the passing game. Now, what the strange thing is, Tech's been dominant in run blocking at the wide receiver position, and this will be part of Inside the Numbers tomorrow. But Caleb Smith and Tavion Robinson rank third and fourth in the country in run blocking grades for wide receivers.
For wide receivers.
And the top two players both go to Arizona State. So it's odd seeing the top two guys at one school, the next two guys at another school. And Robinson's the outlier there because Caleb Smith's a big guy, 6'2", 225. One of the Arizona State guys is 6'7", 230. And the other one is 6'3", 206.
6'7", 230.
He's regular Bucky Hodges, isn't he?
Wow, yeah.
And
I bet they list him at tight end.
No, they list him at wide. Well, they list him at wide receiver on PFF.
PFF knows what's up. I'm saying Arizona State probably listed him as a tight end.
They probably list him as a tight end.
No, I won't say that.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
So I know the physicality is there for the Virginia Tech wide receivers because they do it in the running game. But they're not quite so physical against the pat and against physical cornerbacks sometimes, I don't think. So they might, but that's something that needs to take a step forward against Notre Dame.
So Herm Edwards gets his receivers blocking over there.
He gets his receivers blocking. He sure does.
Notre Dame, I want to look back at North Carolina. The main guy we talked about was Sam Howell. Might be the best quarterback in the country going in, as we said, maybe a number one draft pick. Well, that's Kyle Hamilton for Notre Dame. He is currently being mocked in the top five of NFL drafts this next year. I saw him at 3 in the last one I looked at. Maybe the best defensive back in the country.
6'4", 222. I think
free safety, 6'4", 222.
Yeah.
Man.
Yep. Again, like I said, this might not be the game where you just start airing it out down the field just for the sake of doing so. Because their whole secondary, their whole defense is legit, but when you got this guy at free safety out there, man, that's tough.
So he's number 14. He's the one to look for. And it's interesting because he's 6'4". The strong safety is, you know, air quotes, only 6'0". He weighs 222. The strong safety weighs 202. So just looking at the roster, you'd expect him to be flipped. Yeah. But it's all about skill set.
It's about skill set. Yeah.
Well, did you see the interception he had against Florida State in that first game of the season?
Yeah.
So they showed later on, it went viral on Twitter. It was the angle from the back, so like looking over the defense towards the offense, and Kyle Hamilton is not on the screen at the beginning of the play when the ball gets thrown, and he runs to the sideline and intercepts it. I mean, it was one of the cooler interceptions I've ever
like
seen.
Like I said, if he ran from the middle field to the sideline and he was able to get there that quickly, then even then, like even if you get single coverage on Trey Turner on the outside, it might turn into double coverage real quickly with a guy with that kind of range.
Yes.
So maybe like you want to try to get your deep shots, your isolation shots to the boundary if possible. But if this guy's on the field side, on the free side.
You know, I don't know if this is comparing apples and oranges or not, but I always like to make these random comments. When you talk about that play, it reminds me, do you remember Adonis Alexander against Purdue?
Oh, yeah.
In 2014, yeah. Making a similar play where he came from far away to make an interception. And I guess, did Tech move him around when he was here? Do you remember?
He was a safety his first year, and then they moved him to corner.
Right. So that would have been a play.
He took the Jimmy Williams route.
Yeah.
Now that would have been a play as a safety, and then he eventually moved to corner.
So hearing you describe that play, yes, it's all about skill set. If he can read a play and close like that, then who cares if he's 6'4 or 6'0 or whatever.
Well, Hamilton has 3 interceptions already this season, and this is a Notre Dame team that's forced 12 turnovers. I mentioned this in the first half. 15 sacks on the season as well. This is a defense that likes to make big plays. Hokies offense that hasn't made a ton of mistakes, so kind of like a movable force or unstoppable force versus a movable object. Who's going to win?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you can even break it down into special teams. So I'm sitting here breaking down this game for my preview, and I'm like looking at the offenses, and I'm like, honestly, Tech's offense is probably a little bit better, but they're, you know, they're still close in terms of like effectiveness and points scored and all that. Then you look at the defense, and they're pretty similar. You know, Notre Dame creates more havoc than Tech's defense, but, you know, on the whole, similar defenses statistically. So I'm like, well, maybe I can find a difference in special teams. So I look up the FEI special teams ratings, and Virginia Tech is 30th, and Notre Dame is 36th. And I'm like, God, no difference in advanced special teams metrics either. And that's when I landed on the field position stats that I ended my game preview with. And that's why I ended up making the pick that I made, which we'll get to later.
So drilling down into special teams, you know, Notre Dame has a kicker who I believe is a senior.
Jonathan Dorr.
Yeah, he's 7 of 10 this year, and I can't remember what his career statistics are. 74.1% on field goals.
Right.
And then you look at Tech, and you've got John Parker Romo. Now, I didn't know this, but Romo kicked a year at Tulsa.
He sure did.
Yeah, and he was, let's see, he's 1 of 3 this year, right?
Yes.
He was 2 of 5 at Tulsa.
The only position where there's more people in the transfer portal than quarterbacks is kicker.
Is kicker, yeah. So Romo's for his career is 3 of 8, and he's so that's 37%. So he's going up against a guy who is 74% for his career. So, you know, when we get into the picks later, that comes into play in how one of us picked was that statistic.
Does yeah. that, reading through the preview, that was somebody's main reason for their pick. Yeah. For the defensive line for Notre Dame, Isaiah Foskey plays the Viper defensive end, is yep. I guess what they call
That's
it.
That's what they call it.
Could be pretty impactful, especially if Silas Janzy's not playing. He has 5 sacks this season.
Yeah. That's one of the things to watch for. As soon as Virginia Tech has the ball, and I noticed this before the Richmond game, you know, you get in there 30 minutes early and they do the starting lineups over the PA, and they announced Tech's regular starting offensive line out there. But then the actual game starts, and it's Lasita Smith at left tackle and Hoffman at left guard, and that's not what they announced before the game. The first drive of the game, look out there and see what Tech's offensive line looks like and see who's lined up where and see if Lasita Smith is at left tackle, see if Janzy's back and is at right tackle. That's the first thing I'm going to look for, I think, the first time Virginia Tech has the ball, because that's going to be critical. Foskey has 5 sacks on the year.
6'5", 260. That's rangy, some scary stuff.
Yeah, he's a good player. I mean, honestly, Notre Dame's defensive line is always good. They've always got good players up front. Big players, not huge players, but
strong
big
guys,
and strong
guys.
Looking. Yeah, exactly. See some names I recognize on here, like Howard Cross. He's their backup nose guard. Virginia Tech recruited him, and I remember, like, I loved his film. Like, he's not as big as, like, your traditional defensive tackle, but for a guy who lines up right over the center, that's fine.
Do you remember if he was being recruited while Charlie Wiles was still here?
Yes,
yeah,
he was, which makes sense considering his size.
Yep.
J.D. Bertrand's a very good linebacker at Will. He leads him in tackles. But yeah, you know, I'm not going to say, like, I guess you would say that the secondary is their strength with Kyle Hamilton back there, but I look at their defense and, like, I guess they have a weakness relatively speaking, but overall it's just a solid defense across the board.
And you mentioned some notable names. Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa is cousin of Tua and
Talia. You're a true professional. I know you did your research on how to pronounce that.
Me, I saw it, and I'm like, I wonder, and kept God. Typing.
Okay, now, all right, actually, let's go down the depth chart at that defensive end position, Jake. What's his backup's name? Can you pronounce
his backup's
one?
Name?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Asafo Mensa
Nana
would be my guess.
Asafo Mensa. And then the third string guy, Alexander
Ahrensberger.
Yeah.
Who is 6'6 and 7/8 of an inch.
They don't make this easy on broadcasters.
Well, they put all of their names that are tough to pronounce, and they put them all at one position.
Well, in defensive tackle, too, Jason Ademola.
That's true. Maybe. He has a brother.
He does.
Backup Viper.
Justin and a Jason.
There we go.
By the way, it makes it even easier.
I
think this is the first time I've ever encountered a position called Viper.
Probably,
me too.
Yeah.
So,
I'll kind of like it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Notre Dame's defense, you've been talking about the strategy for the Hokies is not to throw the ball downfield, but they have been a little susceptible to the run. I want to say they're averaging giving up 4-ish yards, 4.5 yards a carry. So Could this be the game the Hokies finally get the run going?
I hope so. Make me feel a lot better. I think if you've been holding back with anything with Burmeister on the read option, now would be the time to break that out.
And is it though, or do you want to wait for the ACC? Or do you want to keep your job by beating Notre Dame?
At this point, you just try to win the football game that's in front of you.
Just try to win every
football game. I don't think Pitt's a well-coached team. We're not going to take them by surprise. You've just got to go out and out-execute.
Solid point.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much as we talked about last week. I mean, that Pitt game.
Yeah.
It could be the decision for the Coastal in that game. Who wins could come next Saturday in Lane Stadium. You mentioned Burmeister. I was really surprised looking down at this roster card and seeing that he has 44 carries this year. And obviously a lot of those are scrambles. But that's 11 carries per game.
I think he's listed with 20 scrambles on PFF. And how many times has he been sacked?
I didn't think about that. Yeah, so, in college day.
So he's been, I know, six times against West Virginia. I want to say once or twice against North Carolina. He's probably been sacked
close to 10.
10 to 12 times this year. So the design runs have been
like
few and far between.
10 to 12 design runs.
Right. And those haven't, except for like one or two of them, haven't really been read option plays. He did keep on the read option like on the last drive against Richmond, which I thought was interesting. But who knows if, Notre Dame, they know he can run, and they know at any point he can keep the ball. But I do feel like that with as well as Virginia Tech's receivers have been blocking, if you can get him out, find a way to get him out on the edge, there's potentially something there. I just hope he slides before Mr. Kyle Hamilton gets in his general vicinity.
6'4", 223. Number 14 in your program.
Yes, he is going to be the guy to watch on that Notre Dame defense. We talked a lot about both of these defenses. That's the strength of the matchup, saying this is going to be a low-scoring game. But if the Hokies were to have success on offense, what do you think they would do to accomplish that?
They have a successful running game, and then they can work play action and, I'll say, smoke and mirrors off misdirection off of that. Maybe Notre Dame starts selling out a little more to stop the run and gets more aggressive towards it. And I think that's when Cornelson's at his best as an offensive coordinator is taking advantage of maybe aggressive defenses. And I don't know how aggressive Notre Dame is, to be honest with you. I don't know if – like, you can be, like – you can be a really good defense without being aggressive.
Without being aggressive,
right?
Yeah.
Right. But if you mix up your coverages and fronts and things like that, which they seem to do a good job of,
So that brings me into our weekly segment when we have a preview. I want to get your guys' keys to the game. If Virginia Tech is going to walk out of Lane Stadium on Saturday night with a win over Notre Dame, what do they have to do?
So in my portion of the preview, I wrote, where I make my prediction, I wrote, there's a couple of truisms when you're predicting or talking about an upcoming football game. Don't turn the ball over, and a few plays will decide the game, and when you've got two low scoring offenses and it's not likely to be any sort of a shootout or anything resembling a shootout, like North Carolina against Virginia, there's a bunch of big plays and there's a bunch of mistakes and none of them really matter all that much.
You're going to have multiple opportunities.
You look at the aggregate, I keep going back to what I said about how if Notre Dame hadn't made those mistakes against Cincinnati, they would have won.
They were down 17-0, and
because of those mistakes,
right? And it looks like it's a blowout at that point, but it's really not.
It was just a few plays, So don't be the team that makes those mistakes, and try to be the team that makes those plays. Like again, going back to the touchdown pass that Pine threw. He just kind of chucked it, and his guy went up and got it and shook a tackle at the two and scored. It wasn't a beautiful thing of execution. It was just a big play in the context of a game where there weren't many. So, Captain Obvious reporting for duty, don't turn it over and try to be the team. Don't give up the Letty Brown style run up the middle to Notre Dame. They got guys that can do that, but they haven't really done it all year, and don't let them do it in this game. So,
win the battle of the game-changing plays would be Will Stewart's
and the turnover And I actually said in my portion of the preview in parentheses, I'm ignoring the stat I gave you earlier about John Parker Romo being 3-8 and Dora or whatever his name is being a 74% guy with a lot more experience kicking field goals.
74% is not great by modern standards.
No, it's not, but he has.
But he, yeah.
It's better than 37.
You make 3 out of 4.
Yeah. I would say your opportunities are going to be limited in a game like this. So make sure you take advantage of them when they're there. You know, so like the opposite of the West Virginia game. And then, like, Notre Dame is probably not going to create many opportunities of their own offensively, so make sure you don't give them any.
Yeah.
Make them earn everything, and then when you get a chance, take advantage of it.
So when you're Virginia Tech and you've got the wheel route that's open or you've got the pop pass down the middle, don't throw it into the dirt.
Right, right. Yeah, right. And you've left a lot of yards on the field on some of those plays this year. And, you know, you hear offensive coordinators and coaches say all the time, oh, we're close, right? And, you know, I mean, I watched the Clemson game on Sunday, and Dabo's right. They are close, but because they just keep barely overthrowing a pass or dropping a pass in single coverage. I mean, they're close. But, like, at the same time, you've done that for 5 games in a row, so are you ever actually going to make it over the line? I think probably Virginia Tech will have 1 or 2 games from here on out where they just happen to hit those plays and you're like, whoa, see what we could do when we're on point. And then the others, it'll be.
Yeah. It's like free throws in basketball. Yeah. You know, don't go 18 for 20 in a game you're winning by 15 points.
Right.
Go 18 for 20 in that tight game where you need all 18 of those free throws.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those natures of. It's just the nature of the sport, man. I think most of Virginia Tech's games here on out, and you can say this for most teams, it's each week it is going to come down to matchups, turnovers, and random events. I mean, I keep using those three things, and I think this is another one of those games.
I like Chris's basically do the exact opposite of what you did in Morgantown.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you give up 2 long plays for touchdowns early and come up empty in the red zone. Take advantage of opportunities. Don't give other opportunities.
Score more points than the other team, right? Brilliant analysis.
There's our keys to the game.
So as far as predicting scores, looks like Chris and I both went with Virginia Tech 20, Notre Dame 17.
Yeah, you guys didn't waver at all.
When it's a game like this where I can see a clear path to victory, even though it's tight, I'm going to err on the side of what our readers would call the good guys. Now, David Cunningham broke from the pack for the first time. We've all picked.
You've all been in line for 4 straight weeks.
So David locks in on the field goal stats that we've been given, and he says Notre Dame 16, Virginia Tech 14.
There you go. Yeah. Yep. I think I was reading through the preview, and I would have picked Virginia Tech up until reading David's. I'm thinking about it. It could be a game where it comes down to –
It would not surprise me if that's
– Oh, it's a very
– It comes down to a field goal. You miss it, you lose.
It's an extremely realistic scenario.
Well, I was also looking at it. All 3 of you are 2-2 on your picks. The Tech sideline readers are 3-1 now.
Yeah, right. They are. the thing is, like, I'm not changing my mind this week. Like – But the 2 games I got wrong were the games where, like, my initial pick, I didn't feel good about it the next day, and I wanted to go back and change it, but I've already submitted for editing, so I don't want to go back and change it. Because, let's say, I picked North Carolina to win, and then the next day I'm like, you know what? I found out who Tech was going to start somebody else at Rover, and I just felt much, much better about the situation. I'm like, Tech's going to win. I'm going to go back and change it, but I already submitted it.
And you got to rewrite the explanation
right,
and everything.
Right, exactly. And then West Virginia – was like the opposite. I picked Tech, and then the next day I'm like, you know what? No, I'm not feeling it as much as I was yesterday. But, you know, I wrote that preview yesterday and picked Tech to win a very close game, and I still feel the exact same way today.
So no wavering from Chris Coleman week. So hopefully he feels pretty good about it. Means there's a good result on the field.
So the one where we differed was the fans picked UNC. We all picked UNC to win, and the fans picked Virginia Tech to win. And so the way we do the polls, 12% of voters picked Tech to beat North Carolina. Did I say Notre Dame earlier? I meant North Carolina.
Couldn't tell you. Yeah. We'll say you said North Carolina.
Yeah. So the one where the fans differ from us was North Carolina. We picked North Carolina. The fans picked Virginia Tech. 12 of them picked Tech to win by 11-plus points, and 49% picked Tech to win by 1 to 10, which is what it wound up being. Yep. So that's a total of 61% of Hokies fans thought Tech was going to win that game.
What are the picks for Notre Dame? What are the poll results so far?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So let me go back and look at that and see where we are. Right now we have, as of this moment, we have 571 votes. And these things typically wind up anywhere from 1,200 to 2,000 votes. So
depending on the game.
Yeah. And the thing is, once you have hundreds of votes, the percentages aren't really going to change much. Yeah. So 9% are saying Tech by 11+. 47% are saying Tech by 1
to
10.
Over 50% are saying Virginia Tech's going to win. Yeah. I mean, I think by the end of the season, you can go back and look at every single poll, and like over 50% of the fans will pick us to win every single game of the season.
I think that's true.
Probable.
Yeah. You know, and so then it's 1/3 think Tech is going to lose by 1 to 10. And then there's a percentage, 10% think Notre Dame kind of runs away with it. And you never know how. I don't think a lot of opposing fans pile into these things. I don't think that's a thing.
No.
But I do. I have seen a friend of mine. I'll never forget this. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And we put up one of those, what do you think Virginia Tech's record will be this year, polls.
Oh, right.
And this is when Tech was a meh football team. And he scrolled down and went 12-0. You know, just being that guy, you know. So there's I don't know what the margin of error for
there's always
is.
People who know something's not going to happen, but they just do that just to be that
anyway.
Guy.
Like I'm a good host.
The 9% of people saying that Tech's going to win by 11+.
And you also, but you also have the
to win by 11, you got to score 11.
you also have the people who. They're going to be negative no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
So like, there's no way we're going to beat Notre Dame. We're going to lose 10+. They always expect, we only scored 21 against Richmond. How are we going to beat Notre Dame, right?
Yeah,
so Notre Dame by 10+.
I put something on Twitter the other day. I don't remember what it was, and it made Tech look good, and it got like, I don't know, 150 retweets and not 150 retweets, excuse me, 150 likes and 20 retweets, and one guy responded with something negative. So that's what you see is that negative response, but you got to look and see the retweets and the likes. They way outnumber that negative guy.
I think the fans have also, they've guessed the score right every time. The Richmond one was right on that line. They were 11 plus.
The fans said Tech would win by 11 plus, and they won by 11.
So yeah. Still in that range, and then 1 to 10 against North Carolina, 11 plus against Middle Tennessee, which were all correct. So fans doing a good job.
They're right again this week, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk to those fans and see what they're putting in the YouTube chat. I'll send
nice
it over to
segue,
Katie.
Man.
That was very good.
Go. Just two questions this week. First one from Dan Steinbach. He says, we've seen Notre Dame's defense go against a bad quarterback with Mertz and win, and a good quarterback in Ritter and lose due to their bad offense. Does Braxton need to play his best game to win, or do we just need to score early and hold on?
I don't think there's any holding on to it. I mean, if Tech gets up 14-0 or something, I'm going to feel really good about it. Because then Notre Dame's just going to have to drop back and pass the whole time, and I just don't think they're really that type of football team. I've obviously, Cincinnati quarterback is very, very good. And the Cincinnati's offense as a whole is very good. I don't want to sound too much like a football coach, but, I mean – Braxton, when he has the opportunity to make a play, he needs to make it, and then he just needs to not screw it up on the other plays.
I would answer this way. I do think we need to see something from him in the running game that we haven't seen.
Besides just scrambling.
Yeah, and he's been a great scrambler, don't get me wrong. But in my dream world, if there was – he did say there was something up with his shoulder. He wasn't specific. Then the 2 weeks off have healed him, and he's going to go out and rip off 10 to 12 read option runs where he averages 8 yards a carry. So there's that part of what could happen. But if you look at his passing grades given by PFF, he was an 86% against North Carolina. He was excellent. And he was in the mid-50s the next two games.
And you're talking rating.
Yes. The PFF grade.
Grade, yes.
Yeah. And he was in the mid-50s the next two games and then low 60s against Richmond. If he elevates that if his PFF grade is 70 to 75 to maybe even 80, then I think that really gives Tech a much better chance to win this game, particularly if he uncorks some sort of running game with it. Those are both really good signs. Mm. Now, he can do either or, and still it's a good thing for Virginia Tech. But in general... a little or a lot better in at least one of those areas.
Well, shout out to Dan Steinbach for the great question. He is one of the hosts of the 3304 Sports Podcast. Does a great job for us.
All right.
And then from Spencer Swain, do you think the inability to get the ball down the field to our receivers comes down to Brad Cornelison's game plan and the route trees, or is it the receivers not doing their jobs and not developing?
Oh, man.
All of the above. Yeah, and the quarterback just not.
And sometimes it's the ball's not there. I mean, what we've seen a miscommunication between Burmeister and Paiute when Burmeister threw the back shoulder and Paiute kept going. We've seen one hit Caleb Smith in the hands that he probably should have caught. It's all Caleb Smith's fault. and then we've seen Burmeister not be accurate on some others. We've seen wide receivers absolutely not being able to get separation on some others.
And we have heard both Fuente and Burmeister say that there are throws he has not tried to make that maybe he should have.
Right, right. So, I mean, there's never when something's going wrong in football, it's generally not one thing that is causing it all to go wrong. I mean, Notre Dame's quarterbacks aren't playing well, but that can't just be pinned on the quarterbacks. They can't block anybody either.
Yeah.
Now, when Tech has hit a ball deep down the field, like the sideline throw against UNC to Trey Turner, everything about that play was perfect. Although you could even say that Turner didn't have very much separation on the play. It was just a perfectly placed ball.
It's a big time throw.
Yeah. I just don't think, like, Burmeister's got an inconsistent downfield arm. And I don't think that's something that'll be fixed overnight. Or maybe it will. I thought he pushed it. When I saw him in the preseason, I thought he was pushing the ball down the field pretty well. Now, granted, my basis of comparison was like the next guy after him throwing the ball was Knox Kadem. And Knox Kadem does not have a strong arm at all. That's probably an FCS level arm strength. So that's what I'm seeing. That's my basis for comparison.
Right.
Because they're the two guys throwing there. So I think we kind of are what we are. I don't think we have the personnel to have a good deep game. I just don't think we do.
Well, this isn't the game you want to have a good – or you would like to have a good
deep
game, but this is not the game you probably want to attack downfield against.
Unless Kyle Hamilton sees some shiny thing over there and wanders off, stay away from it.
Yeah. It seems like if you do too much of that this game, you're attacking their strength with your weakness.
Yep.
And that just doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yep. Let's do one more.
If Fuente and Cornelson missing a dominant H back, it seems they always had a good package of plays from that position. Plus, now, Keen was a heck of a run blocker.
Is that Ronnie no relation Adams?
No, or is I that don't know. An uncle that. Or not related to me.
All right. Let's see. That's a good question, actually. So when Fuente first got here, his H back was Sam Rogers.
Yep.
He was not a traditional H back. More of a fullback. They could also use him as a running back. He was a different kind of
man.
H-back.
Way underrelated as an athlete. Yeah, underrated as an athlete.
Yeah. He was Sam Rogers was probably more like Fuente's H-back that he had at Memphis, whose name I forget. Then the next year, or for the next 3 years, his H-back was Dalton King, and Dalton King was able to come in and play the position as a true freshman, despite the fact that he'd been a high school running back and he had never played the position before, which is extremely impressive. Then Keen left, and I'm not even sure who I would consider their H-back now. It was not James Mitchell. Well, he was not playing now, but even last year I wouldn't have considered it James Mitchell. Like, I don't know if it's, I guess it'd be Gallo, technically. But yeah, I mean, that's a solid point. Like, I don't know who exactly I would term as Virginia Tech's H-back. So maybe that could be a big part of the missing piece.
And you would assume it's Nick Gallo kind of playing that role a little bit, or at least he was when James Mitchell was there, kind of playing the Sam Rogers to James Mitchell's Bucky Hodges.
Well, you know, I remember 2 years ago, they actually lined Mitchell up in the slot a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, you had Dalton Keene who could play your H-back role.
And you don't really – an H-back is a guy who lines up at tight end in line or in the backfield, right?
Yeah. Generally, a fullback slash tight end,
right,
is a general description of an.
Not
H-back.
A guy you put out wide.
No, but you
like
can.
A wide receiver.
You can. Yeah, I mean, they did that with Sam Rogers a little bit. I mean, how exactly he's used can vary a little bit based on the skill set of the player. But yeah, you know, who is Virginia Tech's H-back?
You know, there's not a lot of guys listed as tight end on this roster. There's James Mitchell, Nick Gallo, Drake Dulius, and then there's Jared Gibble and Ty Eller, and then that's the only five I see at TE.
Right.
And I don't know what they've got in the true freshman class that maybe not listed on this roster card.
Gibble, you just listed him.
Yeah, he was listed.
Yep.
Well, Keen and Rogers, pretty much for the entirety of their time at Tech, they were big play threats and were usually able to get downfield, make some plays out of the backfield, and that could be something that they're missing when it comes to the explosiveness of the offense.
Yeah, that's a good question. That'd actually be a good question for Brandon Patterson.
Okay.
To maybe do an article about
our analyst.
Our analyst, yeah. He's more X's and O's inclined than I am. But that's a really good point about the H-back and how, you know, Fuente used to talk about how difficult it was to play H-back because, you know, except for quarterback, it was the hardest position to play on offense. And he used to say that about, like, Dalton King because it was really impressive how quickly Dalton King was able to come in and start as a true freshman, learning that second hardest position.
Good questions from the YouTube chat today.
Yeah.
So let me pimp Brandon Patterson a little bit. He wrote a recent article for us about Tenuta and Hoffman. And they're not playing as well as they did last year, you know, either eye test or PFF grades. And Brandon broke things down really well. He didn't get hugely into the nuts and bolts of how offensive linemen, the technique and all that stuff. But he said a few things I remember that was really interesting. That Hoffman apparently, in a press conference, talked about needing to get their footwork right. And Brandon specifically said that the second step that an offensive lineman makes is very important. They make their first step, and that's generally short. And if you extend on your second step, then you lose strength. And he said, you know, picture yourself when you're pushing something, you're taking short steps. You lose a lot of your leverage if you take longer steps. Mm-hmm. And then he also talked about Brock bringing his hands from down low up high. He called it a granny shot technique, talking about the basketball term. But so he got into a little bit of that, and there's only so much he can see watching, television film from fairly far away. But he writes some really interesting stuff, cracks a few jokes along the way, and if you sign up for a monthly subscription, your first month is free.
For students right now.
That is correct.
Well, brings us into where I wanted to go. What's coming up over the next couple of days before the Notre Dame game on TechSideline.com? Preview already posted today.
Inside the Numbers tomorrow, Friday Q&A. I'll probably post that Thursday night, actually, because I'm going to be gone all day Friday. And I'm sure Jason Same will send some stuff, too.
For recruiting coverage.
Yeah.
Perfect. And I know there's basketball content coming up, too. With
David, I believe, is hard at work in the next room right now on a basketball.
Writing up the basketball press conference, right?
From yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
From Monday.
Getting close to crossover season here with football.
So what exactly is the Storm Murphy nickname now? Is it Little Rat?
That's what Mike Young called him.
He's a little, he said something
like I love it. I can't believe it when I see that little rat running around.
He said he's mean as a snake. He's got all these.
So he looks like a paper boy, but he's mean as a snake.
Mike Young has the most quotable answers to a lot of questions.
We have got to start a t-shirt shop that just sells Mike Young quotes on t-shirts. Anybody want that job? We'll give you a cut of the profits.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We dove into Virginia Tech and Notre Dame coming up on Saturday, 7:30 kick on the ACC Network from Lane Stadium. Want to thank everybody on set, Will Stewart across the way, the founder and general manager for TechSideline.com. You can find him at WillStewartTSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman, lead analyst and columnist for TechSideline at ChrisColemanTSL on Twitter. Katie Adams in our fourth chair, again, some great trivia and nuggets today in that middle section, and did a great job with the YouTube questions. You can find her at Katie6Adams on Twitter. And as always, Malcolm Stewart doing a great job behind the scenes. I'm Jake Lyman signing off here on episode 197 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Enjoy the game, Hokies fans. We'll see you next week.